Well, welcome back to ZA Confidential, the wine and booze tasting podcast, where we taste wine and booze and let you know if it's any good. Today, I believe we are in the Cape, and I believe we're in for a red wine, because I've done a little bit of research and had a look at the label. Before we introduce the wines, who are our tasters today? Well, we have Chris Gilmore, who's an analyst, a columnist, an anarchist, if you happen to believe that Scottish independence is naughty. We have Jeremy Sampson, who is well-known in the world of branding, as I say every time, because I can't think of anything brand new to say about him. And we have Malcolm McDonald, who is helping us with the technical side of these things. He works for Clientele. He knows more about IT than I ever will. And I can say that with total confidence. And last but not least, we have award-winning restaurateur and food writer and wine lover and jolly nice bloke, Michael Olivier. Welcome, Michael. What are we drinking?
Thank you, John. Thank you. It is quite nice to hear Malcolm give a sort of sigh of happiness when he got his nose up into this bottle. It's from Rickety Bridge in Franschhoek.
He didn't put his nose in the bottle. We've got a virus.
We've got a
pandemic. He put his nose in his glass.
Sorry. This is from Rickety Bridge. I was down there a couple of weeks ago and had really a very, very happy visit. And one of the wines that I really enjoyed was the Rickety Bridge Printer's Devil Belfagor 2017. This is a blend of Sincer and Cabernet Sauvignon. The Cabernet Sauvignon content is 10%, and that's been wooded. Now, again, as I've said before, I'm a total sucker for Sincer. Half of my father's wine plantings were Sincer. I like the translucency of the wine. I love the nose, that sort of lovely, bright fruited cherries and blueberries and blackberries and all sorts of wonderful things there. I think the palate is quite elegant. I think it's very balanced. It's got nice and spicy, which is one of the things that I like about Sincer. And the Cabernet just gives it that lovely gravitas. And I think it lifts it into a totally different realm of being an absolutely fine wine. This is a sort of wine that you want to have with something spicy, like maybe Boerewors off the Braai, or a North African lamb tagine, or a lamb biryani, a local, nice local Cape dish. Very acceptable. Nice, too, as, you know, if you've had a good dinner, and you're sort of sitting down around the fire or on the patio or wherever, and you just feel like a little bit more wine, I think this is a great wine to have on its own. And I would suggest, as most people would suggest, a dark chocolate. I would suggest that a white chocolate would be perfect with this, because this, to me, has a sort of undertow of white chocolate to it.
You know what this screams at me, Mike?
What?
Cheese board.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
A lovely mixed cheese board, maybe even a selection of 20 different goat's cheeses.
Yes.
Which are among my favourite. Some nice bread to smear it on, a few crackers, and a bottle of this, and I would be a happy camper. That would be my lunch, breakfast, and dinner. I know when you taste wine, you're meant to sort of look at it and then sniff it and then slurp it a little bit and spit it out. I took one sip and drained the glass. So I think that tells you that I quite like it.
Absolutely.
Well, Malcolm, you seem to be grinning a bit. What do you make of it?
Well, I think this is a perfect bit of wine. It's just got everything absolutely spot on. There's no harshness, but there's plenty of flavour. It's very interesting. I think you could probably have this with almost anything as far as food goes, and it would work. And just my new favourite. I think I'm definitely going to get the details and order a few cases of this after this podcast.
Well, from Rickety Bridge to Rickety Samson. Jeremy, what do you make of it?
Well, Rickety Bridge is one of those wine producers I've been aware of for a long time, but as a lot of people in the advertising industry don't seem to realise, awareness is only the start. Doesn't mean to say you are going to adopt or try or be seduced by it and then stay loyal to it. And I think Rickety Bridge has just given me a reason to go back to Rickety Bridge, because again, the label's interesting because it doesn't mention it, although it's on the neck, I see. But the wine is absolutely sublime. It really is gorgeous. It's not often I say that either, and it really hangs about beautifully in the mouth as well. So yes, gets my tick. But I do have a question about glass and heavy bottles and things like that, but that's perhaps a subject for later in the programme, if not another programme.
Later in the programme. Well, from the sublime to Chris Gilmore, what do you make of it?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, Jeremy, as a segue into that. As soon as you touch the bottle, I mean, you just discern quality. It's heavy. And not everyone likes that, but I love it. I think it's wonderful. And then I concur with Malcolm there. The first whiff, oh my goodness. By Jove, you know there's something special in this glass. And I resisted the temptation to do a John Fraser there and just whack it out in a one-er. But it was very, very compelling. This really is beautiful. It's rich, it's heavy. It's really quite a it's a special, special wine.
So you quite like it?
I love it.
It's quite interesting. The Cinso vineyard, which makes up 90% of this wine, is in fact, or was in fact, planted in 1955. So it has the potential of being one of the really older vineyards in the Cape, and of course one of the reasons why it's producing such wonderful wine.
So it's several times older than me, or not. Michael, you and I have both had some very pleasant experiences at Rubin's Restaurant in Franschhoek.
Yes.
Which is, of course, just along the road from the Rickety Bridge vineyards and cellar. And I first came across Rickety Bridge because I think it was one of those wines that Rubin did by the glass. And I remember being very, very pleasantly surprised by it, thinking, gosh, you can do quality wines by the glass of this sort. And I know he's also done other stuff like the Chocolate Block, which is another quite well-regarded wine from that part of the world. And I just wish I did more going to restaurants where you can do that sort of thing, where there's a nice chalkboard and a good choice of wines. And thank you, Rubin, for introducing me to Rickety Bridge, and thank you for my confirmation, Michael Olivier. That really was good. You said you'd visited it. Is there much to do other than get drunk and get a bit rickety?
They have a restaurant that's very well known. I didn't actually eat there, but certainly when I go back to the Cape, I would certainly like to. It's a beautiful place. It's a sort of place that you drive into, and before you've even got out of your car, you know that this is a place of where you're going to relax and you're going to have some fun. And they've got lovely tasting facilities, beautiful outdoor facilities as well. And this restaurant, which is called Paulina's, I think the farm was originally called Paulina's Drift, and now obviously known as Rickety Bridge. And I didn't get much feeling of the bridge going over the river was that rickety as we arrived.
I also seem to remember a railway, a little railway that takes tourists past.
John, that's the Franschhoek tram, and it's absolutely wonderful. I was at the Old Road Wine Company in Franschhoek, which is a short trip from Rickety Bridge, and sat at a table that was literally on the railway line, and it uses the old Franschhoek to Pau railway line, and it goes down, I think to as far as Boschendal. It may go further, but I'm not sure. But it's a very modern, very beautiful looking, sort of almost Victorian type of tram. Apparently they're thinking of buying a new one because they want to take the tram tracks further out of Franschhoek towards Pau somewhere. And apparently they cost 9 million rand each. And it certainly looks as though they're quite expensive. But it's a fun thing. They stop at the winery, and it runs up and down all the time. So you can spend as much time at the winery as you want to, and then be sure that you'll be picked up later.
So a wine crawl on wheels.
Absolutely.
Jeremy.
We were down in Frunswick at the end of January, and we actually wanted to get on it. And unfortunately, they said, well, the best way to experience it is for a whole day. And, you know, just go for one wine tasting, and that can be, what, I don't know, 5-6 wines. So imagine doing about 6 of those. That's about 30 wines.
You know? Yes.
I just hope they've got Ubers in Frunswick. But I wanted to come back to your comment earlier, John, about glasses of wine, because I'm surprised sometimes you can go to the best establishments and they give you a glass of wine from a bottle that's been opened for a few days. I was absolutely gobsmacked when one of my favourite places, and I think, Michael, you introduced me to it, was the Vineyard Hotel. And being down there on business, and I happened to be near there at lunchtime, and I nipped in on my own for a quick lunch, and I looked and I wanted a glass of wine, and I chose something which I didn't know. I'd never heard of it before. Perhaps that was my mistake. And when they brought it to me, it was off. And from an establishment like that was a surprise. I had a similar example in the Marriott Hotel in Rosebank in Johannesburg. And we actually called the waiter to show us the bottle as they brought the glasses. And we made them change it. And so I agree with you that a glass of wine, but you've got to be careful, because even the top places seem to think that you're not going to be very discerning. So put the plonk in from 2, 3, 4 days ago, and then they walk away quickly.
I remember going to a Spur down in Cape Town for a quick meal one evening with Madeleine. And
that's Mrs. Olivier.
That's Mrs. Olivier, my bride of...
The long-suffering Mrs.
My bride of 43 years. And
the extremely long-suffering.
she said, I just want a glass of red wine. So the waiter brought a glass of red wine. He must have had the steadiest hand in the world, because it was filled literally up to the brim. And it looked like a rosé. And I said, we want red wine. No, he said, this is the red wine of the house. And I said, what is it? And he said, I don't know. It's in a plastic drum under the sink in the kitchen. Anyway, we bought a bottle and we took it home. But it was totally undrinkable. But what we used to do was the wines by the glass that we offered changed virtually every day. And we would take wines that were left over from the last wine list. And so we had wines available to the guests that we were happy having on our wine list. And then at the end of the evening, if there was any wine left in the bottle, I would share it with the waiters and any kitchen staff who happened to be around, not cleaning. And we would taste it then. And so that we always had wine that was opened on the day. And I think that's the route that you have to take in a restaurant. And I think it's unforgivable to serve some ordinary wine simply because it's cheap by the glass. I think that restaurants that provide good food, good service, and I mean I'm talking about bistros, restaurants on pavements, etc. If you pride yourself in what you do, don't serve an ordinary wine.
Well, I must tell you about my worst ever restaurant wine experience. It's at a restaurant that may or may not still be going, because the last time I went there was almost empty. A place called Quaglino's in St. James's in London, owned by Sir Terence Conran at the time, who is and was quite well known as a big foodie. And I was there with a group of friends and ordered a glass of red wine. And unfortunately for the restaurant, I could actually see through the serving hatch where the chap who was composing my wine was taking the dregs from 3 different bottles and mixing them in the same glass. They brought that to me. I immediately sent it back, and I sent a letter to Sir Terence, which resulted in an apology from him and no bloody free meal at Quaglino's. So I think, quite honestly, that showed no class at all. And although I had some really, really splendid meals when that place first opened, it just gave me a bad feeling. Anyway, I have waffled on long enough. I don't know if anyone else has a last comment about Rickety Bridge or wine or anything else.
John, I want to add to what you're saying about Quaglino's, because, as you say, it had a huge reputation. In fact, I stayed there many, many years ago. But once...
Well, under the table after the meal.
In those days I had money, John. But you actually have one slip like that and you can destroy your reputation.
Yeah.
And you can take, you know, years and years building a reputation, and then you have, perhaps it's an employee or someone else, I don't know, but you can break the whole thing. And then it's very, very sad that that can happen very easily. Now, I'm sure Michael now has a huge reputation, but I'm sure at times it was put in danger by people who were incompetent, and he was unaware of what they were doing. But that's across the board for all of us.
That's no way to speak about his long-suffering wife. Yeah. Not that she was ever incompetent. She did a brilliant job in your last restaurant, Michael Parks, which is long, long, long lamented. And let's just hope that when we all get to heaven, you'll open a branch. That's really it. It only remains for me to thank our tasters, Malcolm McDonald, Jeremy Sampson, Chris Gilmore, and our food and wine guru, Michael Olive here, who's just going to remind us what we were tasting.
We've been tasting a Printer's Devil Belle Figure 2017 from Rickety Bridge Winery in Franschhoek.
What a lovely one. I'm John Fraser, and that was ZA Confidential.